This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne. Welcome back to Embracing Change. I hope you guys are enjoying this season of the podcast where we are revolutionizing recovery. Today we have a very special guest, a friend of Lakrita's, Joyce Hull. Thank you for joining us today. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So how is it that you and Lakrita know one another? I would just want to start with that.
I was doing a sentence in Marysville Prison, and she was a speaker there. And there was probably about 200 inmates in the auditorium. But I feel like she spoke completely to me. Her story was very similar to my story. And I don't know, she just touched me, and I've never forgotten her.
Wow, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you just now touched on your shared background with Lakrita, but tell me a little bit about who you are and where you're from and a little bit about your history.
Well, I'm 57. I have 3 children. I have 8 grandchildren. I was married twice. Both of my marriages were abusive. Mm. I was raised by a single mother who lived the nightlife and went out with a lot of guys. So it was, you know, the norm to see that in my life. I've always been a server and became a drug addict when I was 15 years old because of the abuse I took from my husband. I figured if I got high, it would be a little easier. That ended up turning into 30 years. Mm. And he passed away on an overdose. And I, believe it or not, I got with his brother. And we decided to do some criminal acts, and I ended up in prison. That was in 2008. I did a year in prison, and when I came home, I was lost, you know, because I had burnt every bridge. Mm-hmm. And they sent me to live with my mother, and it was the day before Thanksgiving. I'll never forget it. And all of my siblings were there, and I hadn't had a relationship with any of my family for 30 years. So this was taking me out of a prison and really put me into another prison. And I wasn't accepted the way that I thought I should have been. So I just kind of did this sobriety journey on my own. And we're at almost 13 years now.
When you say, Joyce, that it went from one prison to another, was it because you had some expectations that when you went to live with your mom, you thought after 30 years, surely to God, that they would be able to embrace who I've become, not who I was, but who I am?
That's exactly correct. I knew that for the criminal acts I did my time. And you're not going to get acceptance in prison. That's just a place to do your time. And I felt in my mind that I paid for those crimes. But I didn't think about the crimes that I did to my family over 30 years.
Come on.
And I just expected everything to be perfect. And it was a mess. It was, I mean, it went as far as my family setting me up to see if I would fall. Mm. And fall into their trap. And I knew they were doing it. But that was to be expected.
So do you think they was trying to build, were they setting you up to set you up? Or do you think they were setting you up to see if what you were doing was genuine?
It depends which part of the family you're talking about.
Let's talk about it.
Well, I had some family members. My mother believed in me 100%.
Amen.
She was my gift.
Yeah.
I had sisters that placed bets that I was going to fall and that I was playing the family. You know, I had family members that said I would never change and just give her time and she's going to mess up. And my mother, God love her, she told me everything and swore me to secrecy. So I kept those to myself. But I was aware of what was going on around me. And the more that they tested me, they didn't realize they were giving me more strength.
Come on.
And I had to prove them wrong. And honestly, after about a year, I didn't even care anymore because I knew that I was doing right. And I knew that no matter what happened, it could never be as bad as it was. So I just did me, and I proved them all wrong. And today, they all come to me for advice. And it's crazy.
You know, it reminds me of the story in the Bible of Joseph when his brothers betrayed him, sold him into slavery. And I remember him saying that what the enemy meant for bad, God was going to work it out for the good. Mm-hmm. And later, when he had this vision about his brothers bowing down to him, and of course, he was so immature at the time that he shared his vision too soon. And the neat thing about what it reminds me of your mom, though, your mom was giving you strategies. She was giving you insight. So you would have information to know how to navigate, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
How to navigate the situations that was coming up on you. And when I look at Joseph in the Bible, in Genesis, I don't think he understood that his father seen the gift in him, like your mother seen you as the gift. The father saw that in Joseph, and he gave him a coat of many colors. And I feel like your coat of many colors was her giving you the strategies to say, daughter, I'm going to give you this gift of a coat to cover yourself by telling you what's going on so you can decide that they are not for your good.
It's very true.
But it's going to turn out for your good.
She was definitely my guardian angel, without a doubt. She was a little hard on me at times, but everything she said made perfect sense. And I don't know if this is going to make sense to you, but doing drugs for 30 years, I can sit in a room today, being 13 years clean, and conversate with a drug addict, and I'm 100% comfortable. When I would talk to my siblings, I've never gotten that comfort. So my comfort was always my mother. So, yeah, she did have a big part of it.
Yeah, she was preparing you for this moment.
Well, thank you, Mom. Thank you.
She was. She was preparing you even for this moment. You know, and I think about, like you said, when I came to speak in prison, and it was over 200 women in that auditorium, but there was, you could hear, I say it, it's called the clarion call. There's a trumpet that blows. And it's a window that opens up. And those are opportunities. Like you said, you can be in a room full of people and one person is speaking, but yet they're telling your story. And I believe that those are the times when you know that your life is about to do a trajectory change. And either you choose to listen and hone in on it and say, wait a minute, this is my time. I've heard a lot of stories. But I've never heard the one told out of somebody else's mouth about me. So I need to listen. Because if she can do it, so can I.
That's right.
And I feel like that's what you were telling me. And that's what you said. You know, that moment you knew, I won't be back here. I remember CFS. You know CFS.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Central Food Services. It's the dining room and where you go eat at on the prison ground. And you remember the big conventional ovens?
Of course, I worked them.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. I used to live on the Honor Cottage on the outside. I have an orange shirt. I have my shirts here. I have a blue shirt. I have an orange shirt. I have a green shirt. And I remember they used to get us up like at 2 o'clock in the morning. We used to have to go and scrub those ovens. And I remember thinking, you know, it didn't matter how clean. And I'm a cleaner. Oh, am I a cleaner? And the guard would come and swear he found something and make me scrub it again. And I remember thinking to myself, and I didn't even know that my life would make this shift, but it was something in my head that would say to me, yeah, you better tell me all that you can this time, because this the last time anybody's gonna tell me what I ain't doing right. this is it for me. Yeah, tell me to scrub the oven again. Because you'll never get another time to tell me to do it again. Because I'm not going to keep putting myself in this kind of condition. I don't know how I'm not, but this is it for me. I can't do this no more.
Yeah, you definitely get tired. I was thinking about it last night because I was really nervous about this podcast. And I was thinking, you know, all those years I did drugs and I went out and did the criminal acts. I was never scared. And to come here, like, I was shaken. And I told my daughter, I said, why am I shaken? She's like, because you're crazy. I said, no, I don't understand all the things I did to where I put my life in jeopardy. And it was nothing. And then today I'm coming to talk to a woman. And I'm nervous, which I am feeling better, thank you.
You're welcome.
But because it, you know, when you're using it, it covers all that.
Come on.
And all that, there's no fear. There's nothing to be fearful of, unless of course you run out. But today, you know, when you go, I go head on.
Yeah, and you're sober minded.
And I'm very sober minded.
And you're present.
I'm very present. Sometimes I think I'm a little too focused because I dissect everything. But it has to be right.
Yeah.
And if it's not right, well, then I won't stop until I get it right.
Just coming here, you know, for when I remember when we talked and you said, well, I've never did this before, but I will. And, you know, just even when you said that, it was like, for me, I was grateful. And I said to you, that I feel like I planted a seed in your life and now you're going to come back and plant a seed in somebody else's life because your story for this podcast is another seed for someone else.
I hope so.
No, it is. And that's why you're nervous.
Very.
Because no, when we're doing the right thing for the right reason and we're sober minded and it's unfamiliar, chartering new ground. You just said, I have taken my life. I got out of prison, went to my family. I didn't do all those other things. I was going to come to your program because you were going to actually come to my program.
I actually signed up and was accepted
exactly.
in your program. And I didn't do that because my mentality was so fresh and I was only clean such a short time. And again, I let a man talk me into not coming. And it was, you know, it was pretty much an ultimatum. If you do that program, then we're done. And I knew what I had with him. I didn't know what I could have with you.
Yeah.
And so I didn't come. And
let's dig into that a little more.
Sure.
And you can jump in too, Jennifer, but just that piece. You said, I knew what I had with him. I didn't know what I would have with you.
Yes.
So in other words, you were saying I knew this was familiar.
That's right.
So I was okay with the familiarity.
That's correct.
The unfamiliar. And we talk about that all the time about change.
Yeah, we do. About how pain, because pain is so familiar, to think of being without it feels scary. And so you'll tend to not get rid of your pain or go into recovery because that feels super unfamiliar.
Or you'll stay with what you know.
Right.
You knew how to deal with men.
That's right.
And like, you know, at that moment, to go to Ms. Lucretia's program is going to cost me something. Am I really at this point willing to pay the price? If everything I heard from her is real, I know it's going to cost me something.
Oh, I was petrified.
Yeah.
You know, it's always easier to go with the knowing than the unknowing.
Right.
You know, especially when that's what your life was for 30 years. I started when I was 15, and I didn't go to prison for this last charge until I was 45 years old.
Wow.
So that's 30 years of running those streets and did some pretty awful things. And to me, that was normal. You know, when I got pulled over, went to jail, I didn't even say to the cops, what did I do? I just put my hands behind my back because it was just normal to me. Your lifestyle was not normal to me. I wanted it, but there's no way I was ever going to get it. I had too many obstacles in my way, especially with the people that I knew. You know, when I got out of prison, I lost every one of my friends that I thought were my friends. But all of a sudden, Joyce is clean. Joyce has got to be a cop. You know, that's how that works. And so they weren't my friends. But it took me a lot of years to figure that out, you know, and it took me a lot of years to even connect with my own children. Mm-hmm. My children didn't. They expected me to fall. It was just normal. That's all they knew. And today, I couldn't be any closer to my kids.
So you feel like you have recovered what was lost?
Most of it.
Okay.
I still have a couple little issues that I deal with. Okay. I have a very serious trust issues with men.
Okay.
I was in two relationships. I was married 30 years to my first husband. 28 years of those years, I was beaten severely, cheated on. You know, he had me raped, you know, lots of things. When he died, the next day I got with his brother, who was an alcoholic. He was an abuser, but I didn't even think about it because that's what I was used to. So it was just normal, but at least I had a man.
Come on.
You know, I had somebody that was there, and I could say, well, what do we do? And then when we caught our case, you know, he went to prison for 8 years, only to come home 8 years later and die within 7 months of cancer. You know, we did an eight-year bit together, and I got angry at God, and I said, I just got him back. But I believe that God saved me again because I would have ended up right back in prison.
Come on.
It's a fact. It's the truth. So not only once did he save me, he saved me twice.
Come on.
And I don't think there's a third time. I'm getting too old. I'm running out. My cats have 9 lives. I think I have 2.
I think you have more than that. But in the end, I think that, you know, when you think about this, though, Joyce, I love the fact that when we talk about revolutionizing recovery, you realize that, you know, you didn't. You did it solo. You're like, no, I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to do this thing. I don't even know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it.
I didn't have a choice. Yeah. It was that or go back to prison.
Yeah.
I can't do prison.
Yeah, prison is hard. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, so did you make that decision right before you got out? Or was it once you got out, you said, there in a moment of clarity, I've got to do something different?
What made me decide, and this is really going to sound weird, but this is the truth. I had just got out of admissions, and they had sent me to Kennedy 2, which is a dorm. And I didn't really get along with females too well. All of my friends were always men. And I'm in a room with 200 females, and two girls approached me that were doing life sentences, and they told me their story. And their stories were something had happened that was literally out of their control that ended in a death. And these women are spending the rest of their life in prison. And I thought about all the times that me and my first husband used to physically fight. And I remember one time busting his whole head open. And I think he got like 30 staples in his head.
Wow.
And it could have killed him. And I could have been one of those girls.
Come on.
And then I had the young girls come up that, oh, well, this is my 5th number. I can't wait to get out. And, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, they've been here 5 times. I mean, what do you got to do to learn? And I just knew that that wasn't me. I knew that I needed to get my head together, and I needed to figure out what had happened and how I let it go so long. And it took a lot of time to do that. And that meant facing the truth of the things that I had done, which was probably the hardest thing at all because I did some pretty bad things. But I've made amends to 100% of those people, 100%.
Good.
And
you know how you make the greatest amends?
No, I don't.
It's what you're doing now, living the best life you got.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It is pretty good.
I tell people all the time, we're looking to, there's nothing wrong with asking for forgiveness and make an amends in it. But I think the greatest way you make amends is live the life that God promised to give you. Because once people see that you're really living the truth, they believe in you.
The truth. That's it. It's all about the truth. And the fear. The fear of what people would think when I first got home. That really scared me. Because they only knew little bits and pieces of what I had done. And a lot of my family, I tried to tell them, you know, some of the things I've been through. And as quickly as I brought it up, quickly they changed the subject. Because I think that that's why I'm so excited about this podcast, because my family has never heard my story. Not even my children. I mean, they lived most of it, but they don't know what I did when I was out there on those streets. And they see what I've done today. And sometimes they tell me I'm too bold. I'm too truthful. And I have no vulnerability to me. But I don't think that's true. I mean, you can't argue with the truth.
Come on.
And if I hurt your feelings, don't ask me. If you don't want the truth, don't ask me. It's that simple. And I always tell people that. You sure you want me to answer that? And I'll ask them 3 times, are you sure you want me to answer that? And then when I do, they change the subject. So
we're laughing because she knows that sounds like me.
Yeah, you're a straight shooter.
I'm a straight shooter.
But you have to be.
Yeah, that's the best way to be.
Yeah, people ask me, I'll ask them like you. I'll say, are you absolutely sure you want to hear what I'm about to say?
That's right.
And they'll be like, oh, no. And I was like, but you're asking, are you sure?
That's right.
Because I would prefer you not to want me to answer if you don't really want to hear it. Because what I don't want to do is hurt your feelings, or now you become offended and upset with me, but you invited me into that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I deal with that on a daily basis. And I like to break things down so people will be like, never mind.
Because details are necessary.
Very necessary.
And I do a lot of, I'll ask someone, does that make sense? I do that a lot. Because I do that because I want to know if it doesn't, let's break it down on another level. If you really can, and then I'll do a takeaway. I'll say to people, now, give me the takeaway. And they'll look at me. I said, what does that mean? I said, I want to know that you understood what I said. So when it goes another way, because you did not decide to choose to listen to what I said, it won't be because I was unsure that what I said you did not understand.
Exactly.
And they'll be like, oh, you really are going to a whole nother level. Because I need to know that you understood, so give me the takeaway. And then most people will come back and say, you said this, 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 this. The way you broke it down was this. And I'm like, yes. And so we walk away with clarity and understanding that you knew my perspective. So now you go do what you do. It's up to you. I'm the inputter, not the outcomer. And so knowing that with people helps me know that I'll just give you the input. If you don't, you know, what you do with it is up to you.
That's very true. It's very true.
Yeah. One of the things you said coming in the door was that you stole a book. you committed your last crime.
That was my last crime, though.
What was that?
So when I was in Marysville, I actually got out a day early because I went and took a painting and drywall class. And the day before I was released, I went into the day room and your book was on the table. And the only reason that it caught my attention is because you had just been at the prison. And I thought, wow, that looks familiar. And it was your book. Well, I took that book to my bunk and I read it that night. I think I read it twice that night because it's not a real big book.
I know.
And I'm not a big fast reader, but I read that book so fast. And my little bunkie next to me, we were both leaving together, and I said, I'm stealing the book. And she said, they're going to check your bags. And I said, I'm taking the book. I have to have this book. And I stole the book. And I need you to sign that for me today,
too. I will sign it. I will sign it.
But you don't understand how many people I've let read this book.
Wow.
And I've talked about this book all the time. Because my favorite saying from you is the person in the mirror. Yes. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've told somebody that was talking bad about somebody else, because they always want to talk about other people, but not to that person. Just look in the mirror then tell me what you see. And then when you tell me that that's perfect, then you can tell me about the other person.
Come on, Joyce.
Because everybody likes to judge, and I just think it's terrible. We all have skeletons, and we've all done some things.
Yes.
But it doesn't make you a bad person. It just made you made a bad decision. And God knows I've made enough of them. But I can honestly say for the past almost 13 years, I'm almost at 100%.
Come on.
Almost.
Come on.
I cuss.
Come on. Who cares? We all do it now and then. You know what I mean?
I cuss.
And even in that, you, the biggest thing you did well was choosing to live your life again.
Life's beautiful.
Come on.
I've experienced, you know, before I got out of prison, I didn't even know what vacation meant. I take 2 a year now.
Wow.
And I go big. And I don't go by myself. I mean, I even treated my friends this year. And it cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
But the joy on their faces meant more than anything. And I don't, it just the little things, you know, just I'm going to the hippie fest. I'm a hippie, you know, I got my feathers.
I love it.
And that's just exciting to me. And I've never done any of those things. Like I was telling her, I've never touched a computer before.
Wow.
When I got out of prison, I didn't know you could swipe a phone.
Come on.
I didn't know any of that. And I'm still learning, but we'll get it.
And that's what, that's why we wanted to do this kind of podcast, because we want people to know that it's not just about drugs and alcohol, and it's really about learning how to live again, how to experience the life and recover the things we lost or we chose to give up, and how to get them back and revisit them, uncover and discover how to do a vacation, how to swipe a phone, how to touch a computer. What does living life again means outside of drugs, alcohol, prison, those kind of things, the pain of abuse and, you know, domestic violence, all of those things. It's not just about drugs and alcohol. It is about that little girl inside of us who did not experience the best experiences, or the little boy inside of a man that didn't get to experience some of those things, and they grew up based on their parents' experience, then you have to relearn what your experience is so you can do. You said something coming on here. The first thing you said, I'm a servant. I know that I like to serve. So you taking your friends on a vacation, I can see that.
It was great.
I can see that.
It's great.
And I love the redemption part of your story. I think it's something that everybody needs to hear. Sitting there, you said you estimated you had been arrested 45 times mm-hmm. over the course of your life, and how now you're living your best life. Like you experienced prison, you experienced drug addiction, abusive relationships, and you know, a person might look at themselves and say, oh, I'm down and out. Like, I can't redeem. I can't be redeemed from this. But that's just obviously not true. I mean, God is a God of multiple chances, right? And you are a walking example to everyone that, okay, so you've had some adversity. Some might have been by your own making. But look at your life. Look at the beautiful way in which you are living your best life now.
It's pretty awesome. You're right. You know, when I got out of Marysville, that was almost 13 years ago, I had to literally wear the shirt from the prison because I didn't have anything. Velcro shoes. We won't go into it.
Come on, yes. I know that.
It was
prison
terrible.
Glasses.
And I'm not kidding you. I worked so hard. And here we are 12 plus years later, and I have a house, I have my own vehicle, I have money in the bank, I have the most amazing family, probably the most incredible boss I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
I have a spiritual mentor that, that comes to see me all the time. And I just, I'm just truly blessed. You know, I have more than I've ever had in my life. But the best part of the whole thing is I did it on my own. With God, of course. Yeah. God, I did everything with God, but I did everything on my own. And the reason I think I did that is because I had used and abused so many people. I didn't have the right to ask for help. I know now that I did.
Come on, I get you though.
But when I got out, I didn't have the right to ask, not even bus fare. You know what I mean? It was so embarrassing, so degrading. And today, I couldn't tell you how many people owe me money.
Come on.
I couldn't tell you. And it's just a wonderful feeling to be able to know that people look at me differently today. Before, I was Molly's daughter or Bruce's wife. I was never Joyce.
Come on, girl.
Today, I'm Joyce. Don't call me anything but Joyce.
Yes.
You know, and because that's who I am. And it took me almost 50 years to find out who she was.
Yeah.
And you said you wouldn't change a thing.
I wouldn't change one thing.
Because it's made you who you are now.
I am the person I am today because of the life I lived.
Yeah.
100%.
You became Joyce.
I became Joyce. You're right. My mama calls me Joy Ann, and everybody else calls me Joycey, but I'm Joyce.
Yes.
And
that comes from joy. The word Joyce,
yes, it does,
is the root word from joy.
That is correct.
So,
and
Joyce is living her joy.
And I like to be addressed as Joyce, because that's who I am. And it took me a long time to figure out who she was.
Wow.
And now that I know who she is, she's never going anywhere.
Can you tell the listeners how you even got to back to me?
Well, I work in a restaurant, and a lady actually was coming in for like a couple of weeks, and she kept bringing in different people. And the people she was bringing in, I could tell had addiction problems. Mm-hmm. Once an addict, you always know what addicts look like. Even if they're recovering, you can tell. And I didn't say anything to her because I just knew. And then she came in one day by herself to get a carry out. And a gentleman was there, and he had gotten into it with my boss the day before. Well, he came in to apologize. And he looked at her and he said, I'm going to buy your food today because I have to pay it forward because I was rude to that man yesterday. And she looked at me and she said, you know, that was God. I said, look, baby, I already know. I said, I'm a recovering addict. And she's like, well, hold on now. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, she was telling me her story. And I said, well, have you ever heard of Lucretia Bowman? She's like, well, that's my best friend. And I said, no, I'm serious. Like the woman that goes into the prison. She's like, it's my best friend. I said, well, that's my savior. She was one of the, there was two women that saved my life. You and Miss Dale, the counselor, yes, at the Talbert House.
Mm.
And I didn't like neither one of you when I first seen you.
Come on,
I
man.
Thought, well, that's just being truthful. Yeah. Here they go. They're going to give us this crazy story. But you two women, for some reason, hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't get along with women real well. And it took for me to learn to respect women.
Come on. Because you learned to respect you.
I had to respect myself first. You're right. That's absolutely correct. Because I wouldn't have gave you the time of day. And today, I tell people, I've been telling them for 12 years that you've been my idol.
Oh.
And it's the truth. You can ask my kids. You can ask my family. You can't have my book.
I'm going to sign it. And I'm going to give you a new one. I'm going to give you a couple
really?
Of new ones.
Oh, I'm
yes,
excited.
I am. And I'm going to sign those for you to give away to someone else, but also to keep one in order to have your backup.
Very nice. Thank you.
And so when she came in and she was like, you thought she was playing, like, no, you don't know her.
Well, I thought she was talking crazy, and then she gave me your phone number. And she kept telling me, call her, call her. Well, I was scared to call you.
Wow.
And then she came back in the next day, and she said, did you call her? And I said, well, no, I haven't got to it yet, but I'm working on it. As soon as she left, I called you.
And I picked up.
And you did, and I couldn't believe it. I thought I was going to get your secretary. And I was like, oh my God, she's on the other end of my phone. What do I say? But yeah, Sylvia was the reason that I connected back up with
again,
you.
Again, God.
And she hasn't been in a couple of weeks.
So I know. She has surgery. She has surgery on her foot.
Okay, good.
Yeah, she has surgery on her foot.
Okay. But yeah, she was coming in all the time. And when I said your name, man, she lit up like a Christmas tree. And then when I started talking to her about you, and she's like, oh, you know her. I'm like, well, not really, but yeah, kind of. She is me. And she's like, no, Lakrita's anointed. And I'm like, well, I can be anointed, but she is me.
I know everybody, Joyce.
Well, that's what I told her, because she really admires you.
Yeah.
And I don't think she realized what you had done for me. Mm. And nobody knew.
Thank you.
I didn't tell anyone. No, I should be thanking you.
You know, yesterday I was listening to a message and was talking out of Nehemiah.
Nehemiah is a book that when he saw that his city was in ruin, he was a cupbearer and he tasted the king's wine. Anything the king would drink, he would taste it first. And so in other words, he was always at death's doors, because the king in that time in the Old Testament, they were always the target of someone's conspiracy, because someone was always plotting to be the next king. So they had a cupbearer, and that person would always, you know, like taste anything they ate or drank. They tasted it first. So if it was poison, they were going to die. And so yesterday, the message was saying that it's bigger than you. That was the message I listened to. And it was saying, if someone was to ask you if your life has been about more than you, how many people would raise their hand for you? And what I feel like you just did was raise your hand for me. You said your life, Lakrita, was bigger than you. And you raised your hand for me. And I'm sitting here 13 years later raising my hand for other people. And so Nehemiah's life was bigger than him. And he made sure Jerusalem's walls was back and built back up. And Joyce, today, you just keep, God keeps using people to confirm to me that my life is bigger than me, and that it don't belong to me. It belongs to you and the next person and the next person. Just like you know that that's what your life is about. It belongs to other people now.
Whoa. You weren't supposed to do that. I was trying to be strong.
You are strong.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. Not too many people in my life have touched me, other than my children, of course. But I wasn't a good mom, so I ruined that at first. But I can't explain what you've done for me. You saved my life, and you brought me home, and you let me get the strength to do what had to be done. Because if you can do it, I can do it.
That's right. We can do it.
And there's no stopping me. I mean, you know, I'm a big crybaby sometimes. That's okay. But no, I can't be stopped. And there's too many people out there that need to be helped. And there's so many people out there that are afraid to ask for help. I was one of them. I still haven't asked for help.
But God gave you the help even though you didn't ask for it.
He did. You're right, he did. Because I had that in me the whole time. I just didn't know how to use it.
Yes.
And it took me being set down and taken out of my circle. And nothing to think about was my own thoughts. And I'd never done that before. I didn't have time. And oh man, overwhelming and scary, and no way I can do this. And I have nobody, you know, my family doesn't want nothing to do with me. My husband's gone. My other one's in prison. My children don't want nothing to do with me. I got a parole officer that's on me 24/7, and nobody wants to hire me because of my criminal record. But I couldn't let it stop me because you can't give up. I mean, if you give up, hell, I must should have just stayed in prison.
Come on.
I'd have got three meals a day. That wasn't good enough for me.
Yes.
So I try to do the best I can, and I don't know why, but God's took me through every single obstacle with flying colors. And sometimes I tell my sister, I'm real close to my baby sister, and she lived with me for a year until about 6-7 months ago. And she was like, always would tell me, you're doing so good. And I'd be like, you know, I don't deserve this. Why do I have this stuff? I don't get it. And she's like, you know, Joyce, you don't give yourself enough credit. Mm. And she was right. I didn't. Because I didn't forgive myself. But I forgive myself today. And all that past, I've sent it to the trash.
Come on,
it's
girl.
In the garbage now. And now my cans are open. So you can put your garbage in my can.
Come on.
And we'll just take it out together.
Come on.
I love that. I love that.
Well, it's the truth, because I just don't want to live that life anymore. I want to live out the rest of my days as a grandma, as a mother, a best friend, a worker, whatever. I want people to remember me for the good things and not those 30 years.
And I pray that this moment is just the beginning of our sisterhood and friendship. Because now you have my number.
I've prayed that the whole past six weeks.
You can text me. We can go out to dinner. We can kick it, girl. I'm serious.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm here. I mean, I'm serious. And I'm not just saying it. When I say something like you, I mean it.
Truth is very important to me.
Me too. So I'm saying to you, you call me and say, matter of fact, I want to know where you work. And matter of fact, where you work at so people can go get some good food.
I work at Baba Shawarma Grill in Cheviot, Ohio.
Exactly.
And I've been there 10 years.
Yes. We want to give a shout out to her job on this podcast.
My boss will love you.
Because I am telling you, that man saw a jewel, and she has been a prize to that restaurant. And I'm asking everybody to go there and get lunch, dinner, or just a snack and support him.
Would you say it was Baba Shawarma?
Baba Shawarma.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We will make sure we put it on the end of our podcast. Make sure we ask people to support it. Tell them we got him.
Well, thank you.
And if you go and you talk to the owner, say you heard it on the Embracing Change podcast when you listen to Joyce Hull's story.
Exactly.
A lot of people waiting for this to hit the computer.
Oh, it's awesome. I couldn't hardly wait for you to get here to hear your story. So,
well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being a guest.
Thank you for having me.
But thank you for being my friend.
Always.
And my sister.
Thank you.
And at that, we will wrap this up, and we will see you guys next time.
Thanks,
Joyce. Hey there. Before you go, I wanted to share with you a cause that is very near and dear to Lucretia's heart. That is City Gospel Mission. City Gospel Mission has operated in the Cincinnati area since 1924, providing recovery services to those who have life-controlling issues, food for the hungry, shelter for the homeless, youth services, and job services. To find out more about how to give or to volunteer, go to www.citygospelmission.org. That's www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lucretia Bowman.